Success Match Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Good Thursday. Thanks for being with us. We have a busy, busy show ahead. Jake Plummer is going to join us for our weekly Thursday conversation. Jake via Skype from his home in Boulder, Colorado. When we had Jake on last week, he showed up with an ASU helmet on. We challenged him to go dig through the basement, and he said he could find his Rose Bowl jersey that has not been washed since the Rose Bowl. Now, I'm not going to expect them to show up with that on, but I would think with U of A being on Saturday, like we're 48 hours, 50 hours away from U of A ASU. It doesn't feel quite like ASU U of A week to me. But Jake Plummer will join us. That'll be coming up momentarily. I want to talk to him about Brock Osweiler too. Jake being right up there in Denver. Of course, he's been involved with the Broncos. Osweiler, the former Sun Devil, gets the start this week. So we'll talk some Broncos with Jake, and also Carson Palmer going up against his former team, if that means anything. Michael Fabiano will be with us by request, by demand from the fans, the NFL Network senior fantasy analyst. Who to start, who to sit, Tony Romo coming back to the Cowboys, Peyton Manning, Osweiler. There's a lot of fantasy stuff with Michael Fabiano that comes up. I'm going to be off tomorrow, so I'm taking Goody at the movies today. I want to talk to Bill today about Hunger Games coming out. And he's got a couple other movies he wants to talk about, The Night Before and Secret in Their Eyes. Bill was just money last week when he said go see Spotlight. You saw Spotlight?
I did. Enjoyed it. Thought it was a very
good movie. I've seen this year, easily.
I would agree with that. I don't think it's the best movie I've ever seen.
But well, I wouldn't say that.
But
I really
enjoyed it.
Back in the day.
Really enjoyed it. Good movie. Well done.
Yeah. So
well cast.
Yeah, you need to go see Spotlight. So I'll just go with that. But Goody at the Movies will come up.
And Brad, do you know why that no one is really all that excited or that really knows that Saturday is teacup game? If I would have told you before the season started that the New Mexico Lobos would have more wins at this point of the season than Arizona State, would you check me into a facility somewhere?
Wow.
Just let that settle in for the next hour, 2 hours on this show.
But see, that's like a shot at the ASU fans, even though you're correct. You know, they'll say, well, they didn't play anybody, and then it's fine.
I don't know. They won at Boise State on Saturday night.
That's amazing, isn't it?
It is.
And but Bob Davies done a nice job of it.
We're not going to turn this into Lobo talk.
No, dial in now.
1-800-LOBO. It just dawned on me that New Mexico is bowl eligible and ASU isn't.
Is not. But if New Mexico were playing in the Pac-12 South, they wouldn't. They would have almost all their team beat up. You know, today it feels to me like the Carson Palmer Bengals stuff, we've talked about that in the past with Peter King earlier this week. And so I just want to get the game to get here. The Sunday night matchup between the Cardinals and Bengals, it's like they're two teams that are very similar in that the New England Patriots are going to get every last bit of attention over in the AFC because they're the New England Patriots and they're the champs and all that stuff. And Cincinnati has a quarterback that never has done anything. So I think there's this belief system that eventually Andy Dalton will fall apart. We'll see if that happens. AJ Green is one of the best wide receivers in the game. I'm looking forward to seeing him this weekend. There's not been a lot said about Vontaze Burfict. Vontaze, of course, was the main reason why the Sun Devil football program bottomed out under Dennis Erickson had to do with one player who was just allowed to be a human wrecking ball, and nobody there held him accountable. And to this day, there's some people that think I was entirely wrong in pointing out their inadequacies over there. No, I wasn't. It's funny now I see stories about, boy, I hope he gets some help. And I said then, I don't know what this kid's going to be doing when he's 30, 35, 40 in life, but I hope it goes well for him. So there's some interesting angles around the Cardinals game against the Bengals. But I just think on the field, the Cardinals are a better offensive team. There's not many defenses that can slow down this offense. I know that's a cliche. We've talked about the running backs and how I think it's been a benefit for Andre Ellington to be late in the season fresh. I think that's the new NFL. You got to monitor guys' snaps. You just have to. And you can't just roll a guy through 16, 20 game seasons anymore and expect them to be standing towards the end of the year. I mean, look at New England. New England is so beat up. And it's because Tom Brady knows how to get away without taking a big hit. So two teams that I think are going in similar paths. If the Bengals lose and Andy Dalton gets whacked, then it will be the narrative of, see, we told you so. And on the Cardinals' end, if they lose to Cincinnati at home, this would be a letdown. Somewhere along the way, this team is going to have a week, and I don't think this is the week. But somewhere along the way in the second half of the season, the Cardinals are going to have a game where they lay an egg. It happens to most every NFL team for whatever reason.
It happened to the Bengals against the Texans.
No, that's true.
Home game. Clearly the better team, and they just
Monday
stunk.
Night Football.
Yep, they just stunk it up.
They were just, yeah, they were just dreadful. So it happens at some point in time during the season. And I don't know if this is the time. I don't believe this will be the week for the Cardinals. I think when they go to play San Francisco, that's going to be a difficult game for them in the following week because they're coming off of two big ones, and the 49ers aren't any good. Then they go to St. Louis, and that's a team that beat them earlier this year. That's going to be easy for them. Then they have Minnesota with Adrian Peterson. Then they have to go back east to play at Philadelphia. That's not going to be easy a couple of weeks before Christmas. I don't know where the Eagles are going to be at that point. Then they finish with Green Bay and Seattle. Those games, to me, so this is not the week. It's probably that 49er game you just look at and say, if you're a Cardinal fan, me just as a neutral observer, that's where I'm at on this. But they should win. If you're one of those fans that really wants to see Markieff Morris stay in a Phoenix Suns uniform for the rest of his career, first of all, there's like three of you. I don't know. And they're probably relatives of his. After watching him again last night just be dreadful on the court and play like he just doesn't care. The Suns lost without Derrick Rose on the floor to Chicago. Now, I'm not going to go through the same old stuff that I've been pointing out. That the Suns keep either playing teams that are in back-to-backs and winning or playing teams that don't have their best players on the floor because either they're holding them out because it's the Suns and we can beat you without having Chris Paul, or we can beat you without having DeMarcus Cousins, or we can beat you without having Derrick Rose on the floor. Last night, Jimmy Butler had 32 and 43 minutes. Jimmy Butler playing 43 minutes in a November game, that's a rarity in the NBA, but they did it last night. And Gasol whacked them around on the inside. The Suns' defense wasn't good early. I'm sitting there watching them, and I'm thinking, guys, play any sort of defense in the first quarter. And that goes back to my guy, Keefe. I got to get me a Markieff Morris jersey before they show up at Kmart on the sales rack for $4.99. Before I go to Ross for an after-Christmas special for my kid and say, that's a Keefe Moore. It's a Keefe jersey. He used to be here, and he was terrible. He's terrible. And last night, again, it's like this guy just doesn't care about being here in Phoenix. He doesn't. And it's the most disappointing side of sports to me, is when you see a player, and he's just basically stealing money while he's playing in one city, and he doesn't want to be here, and the team, for whatever reason, wants to bring him back, bring him back, bring him back. We can't just give him away. Trust me, give him away. Get rid of your mistake and move on. Brandon Knight was pretty darn good last night. Eric, I like their backcourt. I do
fun
like
to watch
their backcourt.
Last night was the first night I really got to watch almost an entire Suns game start to finish. And they have a very talented backcourt, but it was one of those games you have to win games like that. Playing a good team at home.
You've been here all your life.
There was nothing else on TV last night, so the Suns.
What are you talking about?
Had
I watched Kennesaw State against ASU.
There was
Pac-12
nothing
Network
on TV last night.
Kennesaw
had
State.
The stage. I even pushed back Law and Order, my normal Wednesday night tradition.
Kennesaw State showed up. I never heard of Kennesaw State.
It's in Georgia. A wise man told me that this morning.
They're the Owls, the Mighty Owls, last night against ASU, and Ryan Seacrest is their most famous alum. That was.
Nice.
Wow. Sat there with my wife, and she said, why are you watching this? It's like 6:30 last night. I said, because I'm one of the five that has the Pac-12 network, and I need to see how the Sun Devils are playing.
And they did ramp up their non-conference schedule. ASU is going to play some really good,
sure they are,
good
week
teams coming up in the next couple weeks.
I just had never heard of Kennesaw State. I didn't
need
know
these,
they were
you know, they need these ramp-up games. It's essentially the preseason for college basketball.
And then the Coyotes play tonight. The Coyotes are becoming a little bit interesting to me. The young players, I think, have some fans for the first time in a long, long time interested. They're in second place in their division. They play Montreal tonight, who's one of the best teams in the National Hockey League. I'm going to watch. Yeah, I'll watch a little bit. I'm not going to sit there for 2.5-3 hours watching it, but I'll watch some. It's interesting to me. The Cy Young Award was announced yesterday, and Arrieta wins out over the two Dodger pitchers. So, look, Jake Arrieta had the best season, but Zach Greinke and Clayton Kershaw get passed over. When's the last time Zach Greinke or Clayton Kershaw got passed over for anything? And that kid worked hard in Chicago, and Dallas Keuchel won the American League Cy Young. I thought it was classy of David Price to send him a congratulatory note. There's a story here in town about Grand Canyon University and Arizona State. They're supposed to compete in an event, and one of them backed out. I've got to get to that later on in the show. I may do that after Bill. And that's pretty much what's going on. I've got Jake standing by via Skype, so we'll take a break here. Jake Plummer will join us next. ASU legend, Pac-12 Network analyst via Skype from his home in Boulder, Colorado. He joins us every week. I don't know if he's got the shoulder pads on or not, if he's going to talk trash about the U of A. He is a Pac-12 Network analyst, so I'm sure there's going to be a little bit of decorum on his part. We'll also talk about Brock Osweiler and Carson Palmer, too, with Jake Plummer. That's next. I'm Brad Sussmat. And now Jake Plummer, who last week showed up with a helmet on, not just any helmet, an Arizona State helmet. This week, and I did ask him at the end of last week's segment, look, if you're going to show up, you have to have your shoulder pads and your jersey on. You know, you said your jersey was in the basement. Did you go dig it out? I see the beanie there.
Well, I didn't dig out the old school original stuff, but I did find this one that they gave me. It's got the 1-6 on it. It was a gift from, yeah, it's the current kind of close, well, except for that Nike emblem, you know, it's we'll scratch it out, put a little Adidas on there.
Yeah,
we're good.
Cover it up. All right. It is the week before Thanksgiving. Usually it's ASU U of A on Thanksgiving weekend. They've moved it up a week. So let's just get this right out of the way. From the Pac-12 Network analyst standpoint, tell me what you expect ASU versus U of A, and then I'll get into the personal side in a minute. But let's start with the analyst side first.
Well, it's going to be a heated game. It always is. It's the one that everybody marks on their calendars. Even though you're supposed to go one at a time, you know that game's looming at the end of the year. And there's no better way for a senior class to put a stamp of approval on their season than to beat the Wildcats. So, you know, there's going to be a lot of emotions, a lot of people, you know, players on the field that are going to be laying it all out there. So I'm excited to just see what happens. I know there's a lot of storylines into this game about, you know, whether Anu's going to play and, you know, different injuries and what each team has gone through. But basically, I think ASU can dominate this game if they just attack with the run, you know, give Balazs and Richard a chance to carry that ball, to keep, you know, pounding it up there into that U of A defense and make sure they don't, you know, get into any third and longs. And then also on the other side of defensively, I think ASU has to make sure they tackle well. You know, ASU, U of A likes to run a lot of the bubble screens and the quick throws. And with guys blocking the one DB, that they have one guy that's got to make that tackle. And I think it's huge that they come up and have their angles correct and don't get too emotional to where you want to try to lay out a guy every time. But just make the solid tackle.
All right. So you talk about Balazs. What have you seen about his growth this year? Because I look at U of A, Jake. Nick Wilson's been injured. He's supposed to play. Kalen Balazs, and you mentioned Richard, but Kalen Balazs has really burst onto the scene for the Sun Devils this season.
Yeah, you know, it was hard when early in the year, obviously, when he got sick and was unable to play Texas A&M and then had to recover from having an illness. And I think any player, especially a player like him that's so big and physical, you know, you can feel 100%, but you're not 100% until you get out there and you get that game, the game win and the feel for the game. And you've seen that over the last few weeks where he's, you know, gone to engage defenders and put his shoulder into him and just keeps churning and running through him. I think we've just scratched the surface of the ability of this kid, his size and his speed. He's got great feet and vision. He's physical in the pass protection game and blocking, and I think that you just got to keep feeding him the ball because he's getting into that prime right now in the season when with missing all those games early and then just getting into the flow of it. So what I've seen from him is encouraging. And Richard, too, is a great little running back. Those guys together are a duo that is formidable and tough to bring down, and they're both hungry. When they get the ball, you can tell they love having it in their hands. So get the good run game going and allow some play action and some boots and get Burko moving a little bit. I think this offense can show us what they are capable of doing.
Okay, now put your fan, Jake Plummer, I'm a Sun Devil hat on and tell me your real feelings about this game.
Well, this game is always a great game, you know, regardless of what happens or what the records you come in with or what's happened prior in the season, you know, all the expectations that ASU had heaped on them and the fact that a lot of fans feel they haven't lived up to those or they're a failure this year and U of A having the injuries and not doing what they expect to do. You know, this game, it all comes down to heart and soul. Who wants it more? And, you know, it's a in-state rivalry, the biggest game of the year. Families are divided over this one. But you got to think the seniors, you know, it's time for those seniors to step up. And the younger players, they have to play for those seniors because they're going to have another shot at U of A down the road. But this one's for those seniors. You got to play with your heart and your soul and play for the guy next to you. I'm excited to see how it goes because ASU's had some ups and downs. And I think that last game last week, being able to pull that out against UW, said a lot about these seniors, said a lot about the leaders on this team. And I'm looking forward to them going in with a mellow head. Don't get out of control. Don't, like I said, try to come up and hit U of A harder than they've been hit all year. It doesn't work that way. You got to just go make the tackles, play clean, fundamental, sound football, and take care of the Wildcats. So I'm looking forward to seeing ASU do that. And I hope Berkovici goes off and tears the Wildcats apart. I'd love to see that.
When you played, did you realize the animosity and hatred and all that stuff? And all these years later, when your memories go back to this week, can you even put your arms around the emotions now that you feel versus when you were a player and understand the thoughts that alums have versus the players?
Well, as a player, I can recall numerous times, whether it was boosters or former coaches or other players or just people around town, hey, whatever you do, make sure you beat the Wildcats. Mm-hmm. No matter what happens, lose all the rest of the games, but beat the Wildcats. And I think that shows the emphasis that people put on this game. It's the Territorial Cup. It's one of the longest rivalry games in the country. And I think that it's you know, bragging rights for the whole offseason. And now as a fan of the game and as a former player, I still, you know, I want to see ASU do well. I want to see every team in the Pac-12 do well, including U of A. I like to see them win every game along with ASU. But when this game comes around, there's no rooting for U of A at all. It's all ASU, and all you want to see is the Sun Devils dominating and showing, you know, who's boss in the state, showing that other team down south who's boss, who's got the amount of, you know, the better players and the better young players and whose future looks the brightest. And you do that by, like I said, those young kids playing for the seniors and going in and trying to win this game. But I don't feel all the hatred that a lot of people feel, and that I can't, you know, I don't feel that hate them and you know, want to speak ill about those guys down south. They're football players. Had I played down there, I wouldn't speak ill of the Sun Devils either. It's just, on that day, there's going to be no one rooting harder than myself for ASU to not just win, but dominate the game and show them who's boss.
Okay, a couple other questions with Jake Plummer. He joins us via Skype from his home in Boulder, Colorado. Brock Osweiler, in your neck of the woods, the former Sun Devil quarterback, gets the start in place of Peyton Manning. From your view up there, is he ready?
Oh, he's ready. Yeah, definitely. He's had a 3.5-year red shirt, and it's time for him to get out of the holding the clipboard phase and mode and go out there and show everybody what he can do. I think he's going to have a big game. I think he's going to be really he's already well suited for this offense. And I think with what he's been able to do, just watching Peyton and learn how a game flows and how to manage a game, that when he gets out there and plays present them to him, he's going to make those big plays and show us that big arm that we've been waiting to see. And I'm excited for him not only to have a great game, but for the running game to open up. Him being under center is going to help. It's just, you know, great to see another ASU kid here with a chance to show the Bronco faithful, you know, what lies ahead in the future. I think this is a great opportunity for him. I've spoken to him a couple times. He's excited and ready to go. And, you know, for him, he's got to go out there and, you know, hey, get hit a couple times, maybe have a bad pass or throw a pick and then mellow out and go play your game and take these guys, you know, where they need to go. And that's getting a big victory.
I know you're up there, but I'm sure you've seen Carson Palmer. You and I have talked about him off and on through the last several weeks. This week's a little different. He has Cincinnati, his former team, this coming weekend, and says it's no big deal. He sells a house back there. He even orders his coffee from back there and all that stuff, which is fine. It didn't end well between the Bengals and Carson Palmer. Do you buy that when you hear that?
yeah, I mean, that's what a player is going to say to respect an organization that, that gave him his first chance and everything. I mean, that's just what a good, you know, a professional is going to do, like Carson. He's not going to uncover anything that maybe bothered him about that organization when he played for him. But he has respect for him, obviously. Anybody that gets drafted by an organization and has the opportunity to go play and they try to do what's right, but it just doesn't work out, you don't hate that organization. But I'm sure he's going to want to beat him. But I really don't think it's the one game on this calendar that he wants to win. He just, it's another football game. When it comes down to it, it's another game for Arizona to go out and try to win against a really, really good ball club, a club that just lost their first game, a club that's playing well defensively and offensively. They're doing really well. They got an old ASU Sun Devil, Hugh Jackson, calling the plays for him, offensive coordinator for Cincy. So there's a lot of storylines in this game, and I'm looking forward to watching what Carson can do. Last week, he looked great. Guys made big plays. They stepped up against a hard, you know, team to beat on the road up in Seattle. So, you know, Cincinnati's going to have their hands full, and this is going to be a really fun game to watch because you got to love how they throw the ball downfield in that Arians offense. It's fun to watch.
All right, before I get you out of here, you got to give me a forks up, first of all, because I know that Sun Devil fan, yeah, because it's ASU U of A week, and I would do the same thing with the Wildcats if they had anything like that. And look, I didn't go to either school, so I don't have a dog in the fight. And so you gave me a forks up, but you got to give me a score. Do you have a prediction on this? You know, you're not at the Pac-12 Network where you hold up the card that says who's going to win. Give me a score. Give me something.
These games, you just never know in these games. It can go either way. It can go back and forth and be decided last minute. I hope it's a close game till the end, but I'm picking ASU 35, U of A 31. Wow. And when we get done, I'm going to go bear down, if you know what I mean. But it won't be sitting on this chair. It'll be on a different one.
Go bear down. I'll see you next week.
Go Devils. All right. Thanks, Brad.
As promised, here he is, the Hall of Famer, Michael Fabiano, right there on the set at the NFL Network, the Fantasy Football Hall of Famer. Lots of questions. I could probably do a half hour with you today, but you only have a couple of seconds, and I get it because, man, you got Romo back, you got Manziel starting, you got Osweiler in play, you got injuries all over the place. Let's start with Dallas. Tony Romo returning this week. What does this do to all the Cowboy targets, and are you picking up Romo in any leagues?
Yeah, sure. Romo should be owned in every league. I know he's not elite from a fantasy perspective, but I mean, he's not far off. He's always a top 10 fantasy quarterback, and the matchup is really good this week against Miami. They've struggled against quarterbacks, so if Romo's out there somehow, pick him up if you need a quarterback, because this is a guy who can help you over the next several weeks into your fantasy playoffs.
What are you thinking, what are you looking at when you see Johnny Football in Cleveland?
Not much. They're on a bye this week, so he's not going to be someone that I'm running to pick up off the waiver wire. And to be quite honest with you, even last week, he threw the ball over 40 times, and he still did a decent fantasy game. It wasn't great. So it's a deep position. Maybe he's a matchup-based starter in some deeper leagues, but I'm not real sold on him, especially because he's not really running. And if he's going to be a pocket passer, Johnny Manziel doesn't have a lot of value in fantasy.
Brock Osweiler.
Well, let's put it this way. He can't be worse than Peyton Manning, can he? I mean,
wow.
9 touchdowns, 17 interceptions. I mean, listen, Peyton Manning is the greatest fantasy quarterback of all time. I'm not taking that away from him. He's been fantastic. If there's a Players Hall of Fame for fantasy football, he's a first ballot Hall of Famer. But what has he done since maybe week 12 or 13 of last year? The last four games of last year was terrible. He's had two decent games this year, and one of them was because of a good fourth quarter against Kansas City. And I mean, other than that, Brad, he's done nothing.
Right.
Osweiler will at least, you would think, be a little bit more accurate. Peyton Manning was throwing a lot of those flutter balls. Emmanuel Sanders and Demaryius Thomas were both targeted a lot. But when those targets are being thrown over your head, short of you or to the other team, it's not helping. So it'll be interesting because Chicago's defense is not the best in the in the NFL. Let's just put it that way. I'm not playing Brock Osweiler, but as a fantasy owner who might have DT or Sanders, assuming he's healthy enough to play, I feel a little bit more optimistic. Sounds strange, right? It sounds strange, but it's the fact of the matter here that Peyton Manning is no longer worth being on a fantasy roster. And I mean, I've said that for 4 weeks now.
Right, right. But I guess when I look at Osweiler, he has no running game either. That's one thing. When I look at Denver, they just haven't been able to run this year. And so, yeah, Peyton's been awful. So now you put Brock in there. It's not like Brock is going to get you yards for fantasy by scrambling. That's not what he is. He's just a big old horse out there. So I'm just not sure about Brock Osweiler when I add it all up.
Yeah, listen, again, I'm not picking him up off the waiver wire to play him. But Peyton Manning, listen, he was dreadful. I mean, he scored negative 6.6 fantasy points last week. Okay, I mean, that's bad. And I'm not even talking in real football terms. You know, what was his passer rating last year? His quarterback rating? He was terrible. So, listen, he's not going to be the quarterback the rest of the season, Osweiler, that is. I think they're going to bring Peyton Manning back once he's healthy enough to be out there.
Mm-hmm.
But in the interim, I don't think change is a bad thing, again, if you're a fantasy owner with some of these Broncos receivers, because what you've gotten so far has been disappointing. And neither one of these guys is even in the top 15 in fantasy points among wide receivers, and Demaryius isn't even in the top 20.
No question.
And this is a guy you drafted in the second round, so who knows? We'll see what happens. But again, I don't see Osweiler being worse, because it's hard to be worse in the stat sheets than Manning's been for the first 10 weeks of this season.
Okay, where are you at? Michael Fabiano with us for a couple of minutes from the NFL Network. Where are you at on Julian Edelman and replacements there? I've got a lot of questions. I've got, is Funchess at Carolina the guy to go to? I'm getting fans all over the place and throwing names, so I'm not going to throw them all at you, all these questions. Mm-hmm. Just where are you at on Edelman?
Well, clearly, Amendola is the first guy that you're going to consider. And unfortunately, if you didn't put in a claim for him last night, he's probably long gone. Kamar Aiken is someone that you can pick up. Dorial Green-Beckham is another player that you can pick up. I know Tavon Austin's available in a bunch of leagues, and he's playing Baltimore this week. They don't have a good pass defense. So there are some options out there, but you're not going to be able to replace Julian Edelman. That guy was too good. Even Amendola. If you think Amendola is going to put up Edelman numbers the rest of the season, I think you're crazy. But at least he is catching passes from Tom Brady, and that certainly helps his value.
The Carolina, I'll go back over to Carolina because I'm getting questions. And I think it's more that fans are just looking this time of year with a team that's undefeated. Carolina's receivers for Cam Newton, and what do you make out of that group?
Well, is Greg Olsen considered a receiver?
He's the only
guy I would trust.
Right.
Funchess is worth a speculative ad. I don't know if I'm playing him. Cam has done it, with minimal weapons. Whether it's Ginn 1 week when he can catch a pass, or Funchess 1 week, or maybe Cotchery 1 week. It's mostly Olsen and the running game. And once Cam gets inside that red zone, especially near that goal line, he's in there. He's got 6 rushing touchdowns this year. And what he's done to me makes him more MVP worthy than Tom Brady, because Tom Brady's had great weapons around him, and he's got the genius, Bill Belichick, pulling the strings. So I just can't trust any of Carolina's wide receivers. Again, Funch is a speculative ad. Believe me, I've had Ginn on a couple of fantasy teams this year, and 8 times out of 10, he's not putting up good numbers for you.
Michael Floyd, a healthy must-start now at this point? He hasn't been out here, but is he at that spot now because of the last couple of games?
He's been very good. His numbers have been excellent, and he certainly has taken over, it seems. I think John Brown, and you would probably know better than I would, but he can't be healthy. He can't be healthy because that guy is so good.
Yep.
Floyd, is he a must-start? Is he a top 30 wide receiver? Right now, yeah, I certainly. He's put up great numbers. And Carson Palmer, I was afraid of Carson Palmer's matchup last week against Seattle a little bit. And he proved everyone wrong. I mean, this guy's a must-start every week. Cincinnati comes to town. I mean, maybe a little revenge on his mind, Brad, against his old team, the Bengals, who drafted him, I believe, back in 2003. He's a guy you play every week now. He's become that good. And he has scored, 18-plus fantasy points in all but one of his home starts this year. So he's been good. Floyd Fitzgerald is reborn. The one question mark for me in Arizona right now is that running game. At some point, does Chris Johnson and his decreasing yards per carry average lose more work to a healthy Andre Ellington and an explosive-looking Andre Ellington. We'll see.
A couple other questions. I'll let you go. Bears running backs. When Forte returns, Jeremy Langford is going to be an impact guy, or is his touches going to be taken
away? I don't think so.
What do you think?
A lot of fantasy fans are hoping that Forte stays out and gets healthy, you know, for a few more weeks, because Langford, as good as Forte is, has been better in the stat sheets. So I think Forte probably misses another game this week, or at least is maybe in a committee. But once Forte is healthy, I don't see how they don't put him back in a featured role. Maybe Langford puts a little bit of a bigger dent into his touches every week, but if you have a healthy Forte and a healthy Langford, I can't see Langford ever seeing more touches in a game than Forte. So enjoy Langford while it lasts, because he's been amazing in the last 2 weeks.
Ben Watson or Antonio Gates?
Oh, not even a question. Antonio Gates. Watson's on a bye this week, my friend.
Okay. And so from there, let's go into starts sits this week.
Remember last week I told you to start Kirk Cousins?
Yeah.
Yeah, this week don't play him. Yeah, not against the Panthers. Not on the road. I don't like the matchup for Jay Cutler against Denver. I think last week he got lucky. Zach Miller and Langford both make mid plays that sort of inflated his stat line. I think bad Andy Dalton is back. Don't play him. Don't play Tannehill or Flacco. Quarterbacks I'm starting, Derek Carr. We talked about Carson Palmer. I like Romo. I like Matt Ryan this week as well. At the running back position, Lamar Miller is a guy that if you need a running back and you've got depth someplace else, trade for him now because his schedule is cake the rest of the season. I like Chris Ivory and Darren McFadden this week. Charcandrick West has become a virtual must-start. Guys with bad matchups, Justin Forsett, Doug Martin, Jeremy Hill, who's barely even rosterable right now. If Eddie Lacy is back, I'm still not playing him this week because, well, he's a little heavy. He's in a committee, and he has been maybe the biggest bust in fantasy football this year, although there have been quite a few. And at wide receiver, Mike Evans is a must-start. So is Jarvis Landry. The Cowboys have really struggled against number one wide receivers this year. Sammy Watkins is a good play, as is Steve Johnson. Guys to consider benching, Randall Cobb.
I am benching Randall Cobb.
No, there you go.
I'm done.
He's averaged fewer than 40 yards in his 5 career games against Minnesota. Jeremy Maclin's got a bad matchup. T.Y. Hilton's my boy, but boy, against Atlanta, that's a tough one with Matt Hasselbeck throwing him the football. And any Redskins wide receivers, especially DeSean Jackson, who could draw Josh Norman this weekend. And as a wide receiver, that is a statistical death sentence.
Mm. Appreciate your time and insight as always, Michael. Thanks.
All right, pal. Take care.
Now, because you know what's going on in the world of sports, your fantasy team is all up to date. It is time for Goody at the Movies. AZ Central Chief Film Critic, Media Critic, Gannett. The big screen releases coming this weekend because it is now Thanksgiving before, which means there'll be lots of great stuff, including, although I've never been a Hunger Games person, Mockingjay Part 2. My wife, my daughters, they cannot wait. I cannot wait to drop them off at the theater and drive away. How are you, Bill?
I'm good. Speaking of fantasy, I will once again make my weekly lament that my fantasy quarterback is Peyton Manning.
Oh, God.
Which is bad for a lot of reasons. One is he stunk so far this year, but you keep thinking he's got that 6 touchdown game in him.
Instead he has a 4 interception game in him. That's what he's got.
Well, he's out. So
yeah, he's
now,
not playing.
Stafford is my quarterback.
Matthew Stafford, yeah. Can you make a trade, Bill? Can you do anything to strengthen your team?
Yeah, sure. But I mean, I'm not going to get anything at this point better than what I had.
Yeah.
But I will persevere. That is my thinking.
All right, let's get over to Mockingjay.
I like Mockingjay better than I like Manning's season. This is, and it's not quite a Tom Brady season, but it's maybe it's a Carson Palmer season. I thought it was the best one of the four, and I'm not a big fan. You know, Harry Potter did this, Twilight did this. They take the last book in a series, and for no reason other than to make more money, they split it into two movies, and that's what they did here. And predictably, the last one was, while fine, just an exercise in setting up this one. So, in this one, you actually get the payoff. I have not read the books, but I have checked with people who have, including family members, and I'm told that, and I don't want to spoil anything, But I think if you read the books, you'll like the movie, the way that they do things.
What is the attraction with the Hunger Games to you? I mean, it's not just Jennifer Lawrence. I see Jennifer Lawrence. Okay, drop dead gorgeous. Got it. Move on. What is it about Hunger Games?
There's any number of dystopian future teen movies and book series. I think if you're a teenager, it kind of makes you feel powerful. You know, like if you're a teenage girl, it's like, wow, I could save the world. You know, like literally in some cases. I think that one of the nice things about this particular series and the finale in particular is that it's really down and dirty. I mean, they don't make it pretty. They don't necessarily make everything happy. They don't tie things up with a bow. They let it be unhappy. They let it be ugly. And I really like that. And I think the kids and young adults.
So you're saying to go see this. I mean, you're not giving me the spotlight treatment like last week. You're saying it's all right. But kind of what I'm hearing. Are you there? Bill? I think we lost Bill. It happens. Eric can find him back. I think he just got wiped out by a plane. That's the deal with Bill. Good Eat the Movies. So Bill joins us every week. AZ Central chief film critic, Gannett media critic, and Hunger Games is one. The Night Before and Secret in Their Eyes are others. And of course, last week Bill was saying to go see Spotlight. And I went and I did see it. This is called Phil, by the way. I did see Spotlight last week, and it was terrific. It was one of the best movies that Bill's ever recommended in the years that we've been doing this. And he was dead flat right, and it was the best movie that I've seen that Bill's recommended. So I would say to go see that for sure. So make sure you check that out. That was from last week. I was just doing what they call Phil in the Business, and raving about your review of Spotlight, so there.
Well, and you saw Spotlight.
I did, at your request, and I sent Eric to see it, and I asked Eric, I said, what did you learn from that movie about what we're doing here? And he hit on all the good spots, so.
So he can write it off on his taxes.
That's it. Big $15 write-off, boss said.
I think that's the best movie I've seen this year.
I think it's going to win Best Picture, and I don't want to go too far down that road, but I... Bill, there's nothing that in that movie that you look at and just shake your head and say, this scene could have been cut out and that scene could have been cut out. And we were the youngest one there by a long ways. But that shouldn't scare. If somebody's watched this, they're in their 20s or their 30s, they should still go see it. It's not like it's an old folks film. So
they should go see it more than the old folks should go see it.
Well, that's true. I got yelled at after the movie was over because I stood up while the credits were still going, which you don't do at Camel View. I totally forgot etiquette. Down in front! It's like the two guys from the Muppets,
things.
You know, the two old guys
in
the Muppets.
Things. They do something fairly dramatic at the end of the movie during the credits, and you're like 7'5". So
yeah, as long as I'm not 7'5" wide, I'm like, just crane your head to the left or right. I get it. I'm the length of the screen, but anyways, The Night Before. Okay, what is this a remake? Somebody told me this is a remake. The Night Before.
Not that I know of. Maybe it's some foreign film or something. It's Seth Rogen and Anthony Mackie and Joseph Gordon-Levitt. And what they are, it's basically a drug comedy. And they can be good at that. Seth Rogen is really good at playing a druggie. I think he, you know, in real life, he...
I get to play a druggie, great.
Yeah, I mean, he gets to do that in real life. But he, he's sort of funny, but the movie... I wanted it to be good. I really wanted to like it, and I didn't very much. I just thought it's strange. It tries to be all serious and stuff in places. I mean, the movie starts with Joseph Gordon-Levitt killed a couple of days before Christmas, and so that ain't so great. Kind of a weird way to set a comedy up. But some of the things are funny. Some of the things aren't. It was too hit and miss for me. I think that you can, you know. Christmas is a surprisingly good, like, fodder for really raunchy comedy. Like, a movie like Bad Santa. Hilarious. Great movie. This one? Just maybe not quite there. Trying too hard, I think.
All right. And so I'm not going to go see that. Okay, I wanted to save a good amount of time to talk about Julia Roberts, because your third movie is Secret in Their Eyes. Now, I will tell you that I saw a trailer for this. I think it was at the end of summer, And I thought, well, it's Julia Roberts. This shouldn't be half bad. And then it seems to me, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, that they pushed the movie back, which is never good. And they're releasing it now the week of Thanksgiving, which means it should be good. But as I'm seeing the trailer, it doesn't look good. Am I right, or am I just flat wrong on this one?
It's disappointing in part because of who's in it. It's also disappointing. There's an Argentinian film that won the Oscar for Best Foreign Film in 2010. Same movie. This is a remake. This is the one that's a remake. And the original is terrific. It's fantastic. This one is not. And it's weird. It's one of those movies where like the people in it are good and they're good people and you like watching them act and all that sort of stuff. But it's not fair to compare it to the original. The standard following. But you know, human nature, you kind of. But it just doesn't quite tie together. They don't seem as committed to the characters. They don't, you know, things just don't come together the way that you wish they would. And I've been pushing it back some. I was trying to make those things fit together better, but I don't think they really did.
All right. This is not one to see, even with Nicole Kidman in it. And Nicole Kidman's eye candy, too, so.
Yeah, but here she's just all buttoned up as a lawyer the whole time. Although there is one scene where she like unbuttons a button to purposely show a suspect her cleavage.
Oh God!
But that sounds dreadful. If you're a big Nicole Kidman fan, I'm not sure it's worth it for that.
That sounds dreadful. All right, I will talk to you next week. Enjoy the weekend. I appreciate your time and your insight as always. Thanks.
Thank you.
Here's Bill Goodykins. Goody at the movies. Appreciate his time. All right, this story about Arizona State. I tease this off the top. Arizona State had a competition. There's been this issue between ASU and Grand Canyon University involving the two school presidents that I've said on the air many times is not healthy here in the Valley. It has everything to do. It should have to do with athletics because every coach at both universities I've talked to want to play one another. But you have the two presidents, Michael Crow at Arizona State and Brian Mueller over at Grand Canyon University, that have this little back and forth going on, and Jerry Colangelo is involved in it in a long distance way. And it reached a new low, I think, last night. So Arizona, this came from the Business Journal, and I sent this over to Eric last night. Arizona State University speech and debate team, the speech and debate team has canceled their competition with Grand Canyon University. And it was going to be held at GCU last night. Within the last 2 weeks, this again, the Business Journal, ASU sent groups of forensics team members to three out-of-state invitational tournaments. Quote, these students won or placed in 24 competitions at these tournaments, including a first-place team win, and secured at least six positions to compete in the national tournament later in the academic year. This according to ASU. We are proud of their accomplishments and their devotion to excellence. The coaches of the forensics team decided to call off an unofficial competition at a coffee shop to let students focus on their schoolwork and prepare for future sanctioned competitions. So GCU said the university's speech and debate team is ranked 19th in the country by the National Parliamentary Debate Association. And Michael Crow told the Business Journal he didn't want GCU and NCAA Division I sports a couple of years ago. This has been going on. Whenever Ray Anderson, I feel bad for Ray on this one. Whenever Ray steps into a what's the State of the Union, I'm usually one of the guys that will raise a hand and say, are you going to play GCU because this is good for everybody and your coaches want to? And Ray does what he's supposed to do. He says that's something that's much higher than me. The speech and debate team, Eric, at this point in time, if it's reached that level that even on an academic front, you have to cancel events, is this a bunch of nothing? Am I just way over the top on this?
I found it funny that the reason why some teams don't go to bowl games is so that their, finger quotes, student athletes won't have to miss finals. And right. Now ASU is saying, sorry, we can't participate in this speech and debate event because we need our students to study more. I read the story, and it's just a pissing contest. That's all it is.
That's the way to put it.
It's just a battle to who can get the most online students, and we're not going to share with you. We're going to do our own little thing. And it's fine.
20-minute drive across town, 20-25-minute drive across town. to actually work on your craft. I don't know.
Against a program that's clearly better than ASU. I don't think ASU speech and debate's in the top 25. At least the story didn't say so. I shouldn't speak out of place. But
no, but here's the thing. Last night, the basketball team at Arizona State had to fly Kennesaw State in from outside of Atlanta, Georgia. Okay? And all you have to do is say to Grand Canyon, we're going to play you on the floor here at our university. And because Michael is worried about online enrollment numbers being poached, there's no other way to put it, they have to fly in Kennesaw State. They have to pay them a guarantee. They have to put them up in hotel rooms. They have to play a team that nobody's heard of, that nobody cares about, that even season ticket holders are sending me notes last night saying, why are we playing this game?
It's like when GCU played NAU last year in the CIT. Why can't we do that? That's a good situation for both schools. Easy drive down for NAU. The game was close. Big crowd. It gives an otherwise not-so-elite tournament like the CIT a little bit of local buzz, which is good.
Okay, let me finish this one, though. If I get the, GCU is still on probation, so it's not going to help us out in power rankings. Okay, it's Kennesaw State. They're not going to help you out in power rankings, so get that argument out the window. Asking them to just get in their vans and come over for a 20-minute drive down the 202, that's only going to be better for the basketball people here in town. And if you can't convince students to come to your university and you're worried about athletic competition, or you're just worried about competition at all, and I can't tell you how many big cigars have said to me, why are we in this little pissing match, as you put it, and that's the right way to put it. Why are we in this little competition with Grand Canyon? They're so worried about every student coming on board. And in the best interest of the fans here in the Valley, they would have packed that gym last night. They would have packed that gym. I shouldn't say selling it out. Packed means selling out. They would have had a much better crowd, at least twice the number. It's like you just have to come over to ASU and play, but they're not going to do that. Speech and debate team, let's cancel that. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic. AZ Central Sports television show is tonight on Fox Sports Arizona, 6:10 or after the Coyotes game. 1 and 7 a.m. tomorrow morning. Thanks for being with us.